You're listening to the Back Home Network, presented by Home Field Apparel.
Welcome, Hoosier fans, to this week's edition of Assembly Call Radio, where each week we discuss the most important topics in the world of Indiana basketball. This is our 249th edition of Assembly Call Radio and our 839th episode overall of the Assembly Call, recorded on the evening of April 21st, 2022. I'm your host, Andy Bottoms. And let's begin this edition of the Assembly Call how we begin every edition of the Assembly Call with our Hoosier Proud banner moment. Well, this was a fairly easy one for me, and I know that my other co-hosts for this evening and Jared were able to get together with a handful of others to talk through the big news of the week for IU, and that was the commitment of Malik Renaud. You know, for me, as much as anything, and we are going to spend some more time getting Ryan's scouting report, a more in-depth scouting report as we go forward through the show tonight. But, you know, the couple things that stick out to me, one, it's just a really talented guy that's toward the top of the rankings. And I think, as everybody said on the show on Tuesday or Wednesday, whatever day it was, you know, you just can't have enough talent on the roster at this point, and that's the name of the game. And in trying to remake the roster is really the other point of what Woodson wants. And you just are starting to see a type. You know, Woodson has a type, if you will. And I think it's becoming pretty clear what that is. And, you know, being able to have somebody who can guard multiple positions, who can score inside, plays good defense. I thought Tony had a really good scouting report on him as well within the community, highlighting some of the things that he really does well. And there's room for growth. So I think you start with a pretty good foundation in a situation where I think regardless of whether Trace comes back, you're able to ease him along to a certain extent and really let him grow into what should be a prominent role on the team by the time it's all said and done for him. So an exciting commitment, exciting news. Particularly given the general state of recruiting in the Big Ten for IU to have both Renaud and Jalen Hood-Schifino coming in. They're two of the top recruits entering the league, which is a good thing for a team that, you know, the roster is still in flux on a variety of, due to a variety of guys still making decisions. But anytime you can bring in talent like that, you have to be excited. And we'll see what the next transactions are from an IU perspective and see how the roster shakes out as we go through the rest of the offseason. But with that, let me introduce my esteemed co-host for tonight. Jared is off, but we do have back once again.
He remembers the days when a movie cost a dollar. Heaven help you if you ever decide to pop your collar. Play hard, but remember fake hustle is a crime. He's the coach and it's Tonsoni time.
Coach, how you doing tonight? I'm so far, I'm going to jinx myself, but I've not read any of the parts. We switched to who's going to host. I haven't read any of the parts that made it sound like I was you and then I was introducing me. So far, so good. How are you doing tonight?
Doing well. Really excited about the direction of Indiana basketball from a recruiting standpoint. You know, the Malik Renaud commitment is just fantastic. You need basketball players. You need dudes. You need athletic guys. And you were right about the fit. Coach Woodson's trying to get a fit into the program. You see that with the Dexter Dennis. Really interesting in seeing how that plays out. The McNeil young man, the transfer, was on campus. A lot of good things. And then don't forget about the guys that are already scheduled to come in. Jalen Hood-Schifino brings a certain type to Indiana. Caleb Banks is a great player. Whether he can contribute right away or not, we'll have to see. But the roster construction for the last 5 or 6 years has been suspect at best, with just pieces that are good and other pieces that weren't working so well. Coach Woodson's really working hard and really working fast to move this into a complete roster in his image or in what his philosophy is, and that's exciting.
Absolutely. And to my right.
Analyzing players, finding every wrinkle. He hasn't ever hosted, never lifted a finger. He's got all the
Well, let me quickly add just one thing about this.
Dude just interrupted his own jingle.
He is Ryan Phillips, who's Padres fresh off a sweep of my hapless Reds that you really can't even take any pride in beating that team. So you can't even feel good about it. Ryan, what are your thoughts? I know we got some of your thoughts on the emergency show earlier in the week, but any thoughts since or other ruminations on the week that was?
Great week for Indiana basketball. I think that Malik Reneau committing, you don't just get a guy for 1 year. I think a lot of times I said this on the emergency show, but you get a five-star, you immediately think, all right, well, he's going to be around for 9 months and then jump into the NBA. That's not the case here. This is a multi-year player, just like I think Jalen Hood-Schifino is a multi-year player. So you're getting two guys from a powerhouse program. Recruiting programs is almost as important as recruiting players. And so I think that being able to go down to Florida and bring these two guys in, you create a relationship with that program. And if they succeed and they like what Mike Woodson does and they prepare them for the next level and they have success, you're going to get coaches there looking at Indiana more and more. And I think that really, and we said it on that emergency show, but I think it needs to be said even more. Kenya Hunter is worth his weight in gold at this point. I mean, he's landed Tamar Bates, Jalen Hood-Schifino, and Malik Reneau. He was the lead recruiter on those three guys. He landed three top 30 players in the span of a year. Not enough is being said about that. Kenya Hunter has been incredible at Indiana, and I think that eventually he's going to be pulled away to be a head coach somewhere, and he will have earned that, certainly on the recruiting trail. But I think that Indiana fans really need to appreciate just how much work he does and how much he has personally helped improve this roster under both Archie Miller and Mike Woodson with some of the players he brought in. Xavier Johnson, Kenya Hunter brought him in. You know, I mean, like, you just look at the list of guys that have come. He and Yusir Roseman both have done excellent work recruiting. Brian Walsh obviously is responsible pretty much primarily for getting Gabe Cups in 2023. These assistants are doing work, and they're really helping, especially considering Mike Woodson had never recruited before. Now, Mike Woodson is the closer. He's been closing well, and he's, you know, sort of figured out that role. But a lot of people said when he came in that, you know, he had no experience on the recruiting trail, so I think that it would be interesting to see how he'll deal with that. Well, the assistants have made up for that gap and have done a phenomenal job, and I think that they deserve a lot of credit from the fans as well.
Agreed. All right. Well, coming up this week on the show, we'll do hit some Hoosier headlines, which include a few general college basketball headlines and Big Ten ones in the first segment. Then we'll dig a little bit deeper on Malik Reneau, got everybody's initial thoughts on Tuesday, but Ryan has his complete scouting report, so we'll ask a couple questions and discuss how he fits on the roster next year. And then in segment three, we'll hit a few of the best questions submitted this week from our community members, and also one from Jay. So with that, we'll hit all that next on Assembly Call. But before then, let's talk a little bit about our presenting sponsor.
Home Field Apparel, wear one for the team.
And this edition of Assembly Call Radio, just like all shows on the Back Home Network, is presented by our friends at Home Field Apparel, where they have the largest collection of vintage IU apparel that you'll find anywhere, with beloved logos like two different versions of the Bison. And Home Field has something for fans and grads of other schools as well, considering their product line now extends to more than 120 different schools with unique vintage logos for all of them. They had an Air Force launch today that had some great designs in it. They've been doing refreshes from some other schools. I think Virginia Tech was earlier in the week. Maryland was sometime recently as well, where they've added a couple shirts. So they just continue to expand both the schools they have and the collections for the schools that they already had in the fold. So understand that no matter what you buy, it'll be comfortable and the colors will last through many washings, and you're supporting an Indiana-based company that came up through Kelly. And what could be better than that? So go to homefieldapparel.com and use our promo code HOME to get 15% off your entire first order. Again, that's promo code HOME for 15% off. Once again, the website is homefieldapparel.com. Wear one for the team. All right, guys. So, you know, the big headline this week is the Renault commitment, which, as I mentioned, we'll discuss a bit more in segment two. On the IU front, the recruiting news is really about a couple of potential transfers. Dexter Dennis had an official visit. And then Sean McNeil from West Virginia, a shooter from West Virginia, is in visiting this weekend. Dennis moved on from his IU visit and is at Clemson, I believe. And I know we've talked a little bit about these guys, but, you know, Ryan, I think there's obviously questions as to there's scholarship questions regardless of either of these guys. But if you could get one of them, which one is the one that you would, I guess, prefer? And why do you think they'd maybe be a better fit based on what this team needs?
It's tough. I mean, look, you never turn down a great defender. And Dennis is a phenomenal defender. But McNeil feels like he fills the bigger need, which is for a volume shooter who can knock things down. Now, he's 36.8% last year and 38.8% the year before. So, you know, he's not a 45%, not that those even exist in college basketball, but he's not, you know, a 40% three-point shooter. But he's a good shooter. He shoots 86% from the free throw line. The problem is here is that if Miller Kopp could just be that guy, it would make life so much easier because we know he can shoot. You know he can shoot free throws. You know he can stretch the floor. He just hasn't done it at Indiana yet, and he didn't do it his final year at Northwestern. His shooting percentage went down. So you wonder if, you know, you bring in a guy like McNeil, does that spell the end for a guy like Miller Kopp? Because it feels like they'd have the exact same role. Kopp's a little bigger. I mean, McNeil's only about 6'3 and 205, so he's more of a pure shooting guard than sort of a wing or whatever. But yeah, I don't know if they are just testing the waters here in case somebody else transfers or if they're really going after these guys full bore to bring them in immediately. I think that you always have to be on guard and looking for new guys if you're a coach in college basketball now, because you don't know what's going to happen next week. I mean, guys could transfer out of nowhere. So to me, it's a sign they think somebody else is going to leave, whether it's Trace Jackson Davis or, you know, one of the other guys. But if Trace leaves, you now with Renault, with Geronimo, with Race Thompson, and with Logan Duncan, you kind of have your front court. You know, you're not too worried about it. You'll make it work if he comes back, and you'll figure it out. Maybe you give Geronimo that chance to play the three like I think he wants to. But you're kind of set even if Trace goes. I mean, obviously you're losing a very talented player who was unbelievable for Indiana down the stretch. But you're kind of set there. And so if you lose Trace and your addition is a shooter, you kind of look at the roster and you say, all right, that kind of fits. But the thing that's missing for this team is three-point shooting. I don't think it's defense. The defense was really good. And you know, I don't think a lot of the guys coming back are bad at defense. I think that it's going to be a good defense again. And so really finding the shooting element, I think, is the biggest thing. So McNeil feels like the more clean fit, but we'll see.
Yeah, it's interesting. McNeil is not a good defender. So he's kind of the antithesis of what you would think Woodson has focused on. And I think it's reasonable for fans to think about that in the vein of like a Parker Stewart, and to say there's another guy similar to that, probably worse defender, a little bit smaller, and if you weren't really able in a lot of cases to maximize some of what, you know, Parker Stewart's strengths were in terms of, you know, just outside shooting at times. I don't know how you do that with McNeil, and I'm not sure where he carves out minutes. Dennis, I think the versatility maybe gives him the option to play some different places. It definitely has a different skill set. So I tend to think a little bit of what you do, Ryan, that it maybe is just trying to cover your bases and understand what's out there. But I also think if you're either of these guys, you've got to ask yourself the question of, if I come in here, where do the minutes come from?
Where are the minutes?
And yeah. And how do I get on the floor? So, Coach, any thoughts on the prospects of these two guys?
It's interesting you guys just said it. I drew up some minutes, looked at last year's averages, and tried to figure out if TJD was back, where the minutes would fall, and how to make sure you have minutes. And the question becomes, too, is you bring in – I think both of these young men are grad transfers, right? So they have 1 year and 1 year only. So if TJD comes back, you're going to have five or six four starters, and Dennis or McNeil, you're going to have five or six guys that you're going to rely heavily on that are going to move out. And if they get the major minutes, are you developing those bench guys to come in and step in? Again, it might be the right thing to do for next year's team, but that's a tough question for Coach Woodson, is what's right to do next year, and then also develop guys with game time. As we know, you get better by playing in the games as well as your development. So I do think that's an issue. For me, one of the things that Dennis brings that McNeil might not bring is his ability to offensive rebound. I think that was an area last year where the two guys, Race and TJD, did a good job, but really Parker and Miller Kopp did not do a great job. If you could add that and steal some baskets, that could help as well. I do like the defensive nature of Dexter Dennis. I think he's a great young guy. That's where I would lean, but there is definitely, this team needs shooting, and if McNeil's the better shooter, which he is, I think that's why you bring both of them in and see where you're at. As we talked on the emergency podcast, it's the timing issue that's interesting. The May 1st deadline for the ability to transfer versus the June 1st Trace Jackson Davis decision. And then what happens if you do take commitments and Trace Jackson Davis comes back? And there's a question that someone posed for us later about how fans think about all that. But yeah, I would be happy, you know, you got to be happy. I'm changing. As an old guy, I like to see guys come in, develop, and freshmen become sophomores, become juniors. But this is a new world with the transfer portal, and you've got to be out there and compete with everyone to get the best team you possibly can, regardless of what that means for players on the current roster.
Yeah, some people in the chat are saying, you know, Dexter Dennis can shoot. Well, he shot 40% his freshman year. Then he dropped from three, we're talking about, 40%. Then he dropped to 33.6 for back-to-back years, and then was 29.7% last year. I think if you're bringing him in, banking on him to be a shooter for you offensively, you're gambling big time, because his percentages have – and you know what? Some guys, as they mature, don't actually become better shooters. They gain weight. They're lifting. They do things like that, and they don't have the touch they had when they were younger. It happens, especially a guy who's a dog defensively like that. He works on that aspect of his game and doesn't round out his offensive game. He becomes more one-dimensional. That seems to be what's happened here. Now, that doesn't mean that he can't bounce back and rediscover his shooting form and start knocking down shots, but you're just gambling heavily that he can turn it around, and I'm not sure that that's the smart thing to do. Again, I love a dogged defender. If you already had a bunch of good shooters, he seems like the easy take, but your shooting is a big question mark for this team, especially given the way Mike Woodson wants to play with four out, one in, and you know the ability to spread the floor. Didn't really have that this year as much as they wanted to. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens here, how it breaks down, especially because the deadline to transfer is coming up rapidly.
Yeah, college basketball headline, Jay Wright announced his retirement on Wednesday, and this brought about a lot of talk about the new realities of college basketball. I thought Gary Parrish, and he broke it down well, which is kind of talking about seeing Jay Wright and Roy Williams, and I think to a lesser extent the reasons would be the same for Coach K, but just kind of talking about the somewhat relentless nature of the schedule, even more so now with the transfer portal and everything else, maybe just burning guys out a little bit faster or things that they don't want to deal with. A question that Jared had put in here was essentially, does Woody's insistence on doing the job on his own terms, not necessarily being a grinder, bode well or poorly for IU moving forward, or is it too soon to tell? I mean, my initial take on that is a little bit of, I think it was what Brian Walsh talked about in some of his media availability after being elevated to the assistant coaching position, and talking about some of the responsibilities that people had on the staff to handle pieces of the recruiting, and then Woodson essentially was the closer once they got him to campus and some of those things. And that's probably an overly simplistic view of what's happening. But I think if that's true, then I think the burden of some of that falls a little bit less on Woodson and maybe more on the assistant coaches, in a way to kind of spread that out amongst the staff and some of those things. But, you know, coach, as you look at this, I mean, do you think that, you know, Wright's retirement on the heels of Roy Williams retiring, do you think that is part of a larger commentary about what's going on with the sport, or not necessarily?
Yes and no. I mean, the job's different than when a lot of these guys probably started, and I think that's a true fact. Is it a referendum on college basketball being worse off because of all of this? No, I think that's a narrative that someone wants to drive with the retirement of a coach. When you coach, you love what you do, but you also know when it's time to walk away. And that time for Boeheim is a lot different than it was for Jay Wright. And sometimes guys walk away and then want to come back in it. You know, Sean Payton's walked away for a year. You see guys walk away, go to get a studio job, come back. There is a lot of work to do as a college basketball these days with the transfer portal. But that's part of the job, and that's part of the millions of dollars that gets paid. And you know that. And people just have a decision whether they want to do that and continue at certain ages or not. But I don't think it means that college basketball is becoming worse. The free agency, all of that is driving good coaches out. No, there are a lot of good young coaches that can come in and get started in their career as well. Jay Wright had to start somehow. Roy Williams had to start somewhere when veteran coaches moved in their time. But the job's just hard. The question about Woody, every coach has to be themselves in their own philosophy, and ultimately the results matter. If you can work 24 hours a day and get a winner, then you work 24 hours a day. If you work a lot less and aren't a grinder and can win, the bottom line is results. But as a coach, you have to do what you're comfortable with. If you try to please someone and say, look at me, I'm working hard, when that's not really your mojo and that work doesn't work, pan out, then that's not worthwhile. There is a happy medium between being real laid back as a coach and letting everyone else do things, and then being the Tom Crean working 20, 3 hours a day, look at me, I'm working hard type thing. There is a happy medium, but if you're a college coach, you're signing up for no downtime. And I've seen articles today on the internet about, oh, there's not enough downtime for coaches. Well, you're getting paid a lot of millions to not have downtime. And some coaches want at 60 to have that. So it's not a referendum on college basketball, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because, it becomes really clear what side of things people fall on based on how they frame some of these up. I think you can look at some of these things and ask those questions. I think the flip side of that is for all the things that, they say, well, NIL has this and this has this impact. NIL, the reality in a lot of cases is we're seeing some really good players return to college basketball. Not only from an IU perspective in Race Thompson, but Oscar Tshiebwe going back to Kentucky. You're just seeing more quality players opt to do that and to be able to stay around in school, which I think is at least at times what a lot of people wanted. Well, I don't get to know these guys. They leave too quickly. They whatever. Well, now you have some of them coming back, and then you kind of flip to whatever side of the argument you want to make as to what it is. I think that's proven to be a good thing for college basketball. And there are certainly some challenges, and coaching is different in the activities, but I don't know that, to your point, that what's happened is necessarily a referendum on that. But Ryan, quick thoughts on that before we hit a couple more headlines.
Yeah. About the NIL thing, I think is interesting about that being a conversation about these coaches, potentially leaving because of that. Players have been getting paid behind the scenes for years. Now it's just out in the open, guys. Like, let's be real. Let's be 100% honest about this. A lot of big programs, this has been going on for a long time. Now it's just exposed and open. And so I don't think that has anything to do with it. I do agree that college sports, football and basketball, are a grind. It's a 24/7, 365 job. If you are not coaching, you are recruiting constantly.
Fundraising.
Yeah, if you're not doing that, you're barnstorming your area, glad handing boosters, getting money, figuring out. And then, if it's not that, it's you're replacing your assistant who went to coach somewhere. Like, it's just relentless. Whereas in the NBA, you get 3 months off, pretty much. And there's, you have to recruit, free agents or whatever, but that's a couple weeks and then you're done. And you can do a lot of your scouting and things like that remotely. But in college basketball, you got to be at those AAU tournaments, making FaceTime with those guys. You got to be at the state championships, shaking hands and kissing babies and all of that stuff. And so, yeah, it's tough, man. It's a tough life. It's a rare coach like Coach K who gets into his 70s these days. It's incredibly rare. And what happens in a lot of cases is guys burn out and they just don't perform. Their teams don't perform as well, and either they get fired or they walk away. And Jay Wright walked away on top, essentially. I mean, Villanova, still a great program, you know, made the Final Four this year, seemed to reload every year instead of rebuilding. I thought, I said it on Twitter and I've said it on this program, I think he's the best coach in college basketball. Sad that he leaves, and I would love to see him, you know, maybe take over USA Basketball so he's still in basketball, because I think he's a good guy to have around basketball. Maybe just give that guy, make him the USA Team USA Basketball czar and coach the team and get a break and all that stuff. I think it's a shame he's not going to be around anymore, but I get it. I mean, it is a rough, I mean, we complain about having to do off-season shows, you know, imagine that being your whole week, you know, and that's just an hour a week in the off-season. So, yeah, I get it. And I think that it is a real rough lifestyle. And quite frankly, it's the reason a lot of guys who come from the NBA to college do not succeed, because it's not the same lifestyle. In the NBA, you do a lot of coaching. In college basketball, on-court coaching is maybe half your job. And so it's just a different world, and it's a different switch you have to flip. And so, sadly, not surprised if we see more of this.
Yep. Other couple of headlines here to hit. Rob Phinisee committed to Cincinnati. He was down to Cincinnati and Butler, so commits to Cincinnati. In the Big Ten, comings and goings, Kofi Coburn declares for the draft. Eric Hunter from Purdue is in the portal, and Dawson Garcia, the once highly sought after Archie Miller recruit that went to North Carolina, left there midway through the season, is going to Minnesota, which I think is back home or back close to home, at least for him. And then the Big Ten tournament announced it will be in Chicago in 2023 and then Minneapolis in 2024. Ryan, any of those jump out to you?
Stick the Big Ten tournament in Indianapolis every year. It's the best venue for it. Every time when they do it anywhere else, it winds up stinking. Indianapolis is the best city to host that stuff. Put it there every time. That's my take there. Who wants to go to Minneapolis in like March? Come on. It's freezing. Chicago's fun. Let's be it. Chicago's a good town. I'd go there once every like 3 years, put it in Chicago. But every other year, it should be in Indianapolis. It's central. Everybody can drive in. It's the best place to do it.
Yeah. Coach, any of these jump out to you?
I agree, but I am interested in going to Chicago and hanging out in one of my favorite cities next year. I do have a relative in Minneapolis, so free housing is the only reason that I would be okay with the Big Ten tournament. So I may still pursue some media availability there. Really happy for Rob, reconnecting with Coach Roberts, personal fan obviously of Coach Roberts, and you wish Rob, you appreciate what he did, hit some big shots, you really appreciate the fact that he has a chance to go play, and you know, you would have felt that way if it was Butler too, but there's that little bit of in-state Butler, Indiana, you know, we're not playing in the crossroads anymore, but at least at Cincinnati, I feel like I can definitely root for the young man a little bit more freely than at Butler, even though I don't mind Butler. You know, it's just there's a lot of news. There will be continuous news until May 1st, and it could affect Indiana's program, but it could affect others in the Big Ten. We're just going to keep getting some news here with the way things are, and it's just the new way. We just got to be ready for it.
Yeah, well, excited for Rob. May have to go take in a game here at UC. I think Wes Miller did a really good job in his first year, had a lot of roster turnover, but, you know, thought he was a good hire at the time and think he can continue to build things there. So excited for Rob to be a part of that, and obviously wish him nothing but success. And if we have time later, we'll hit a question about Rob as we kind of look back on his IU career. All right. Well, we coming up on Assembly Call Radio. We'll talk more about the biggest story of the week, the Malik Renaud commitment to IU, where we'll get Ryan's full scouting report and more. Stick with us here on the Assembly Call.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hey, good evening to the chat mob. I think my favorite comment so far from Brian in the chat, Minneapolis, was the moon not available? That seems seems apropos. I mean, what are you going to do? Oh, well. We will we'll see how it goes. I think a more centralized location has generally proven to be better versus times when they've branched out to
roughly as cold as the moon.
Didn't they do DC the 1 year and then Madison Square Garden the other year?
Madison Square Garden.
And the Madison Square Garden one was particularly weird because they had to do it a week early because other conferences were going
to
be there. So.
And they compressed the whole conference schedule to do it because they tried to get them to move the Big East tournament and Madison Square Garden was like, no, we're not doing that.
All right, let's hop into it since we got to kind of shut it down around 10 tonight. So we'll get into the scouting report and we'll go from there.
Hi, this is Juwan Morgan. What's the only thing better than getting IU's first triple-double in 47 years? Celebrating it with friends afterwards. Join Jared, Andy, Ryan, and Coach on the assembly call after every IU basketball game. Go Hoosiers.
And welcome back to the assembly call. I'm Andy Bottoms here with the coach, Brian Tonsoni, and Ryan Phillips. And tonight's episode is also sponsored by the Superior Insulators, owned by longtime listener and IU season ticket holder Brad Brosmer. We've been telling you about all the great work Brad's company has done installing air barrier systems and spray foam for the IU Excellence Academy, and how they also worked on the IU football locker room, Marching 100 Hall, and many other buildings on campus. And that is made all the more impressive by the fact that they aren't even based in Bloomington. But now, thanks to their recent acquisition of spray foam insulators in Bloomington, they'll be able to grow and service the market more efficiently through local teams and support. And it comes with their long-term objective of having a physical presence in Bloomington. So if you're anywhere in southern Indiana and you need residential or commercial insulation, visit insulators.com to learn more and schedule your appointment. That's insulators, insulators.com to learn more. And thank you, Brad, for your continued support of the show. All right, so Malik Renaud, wanted to circle back to this. And like I said, you guys were on with a number of others getting thoughts on the in the aftermath of the Malik Renaud commitment earlier this week. And so, Ryan, I know you've had a little bit more time to look through the scouting report from him. So I guess for those who either didn't listen to the show yet from Monday or perhaps throw in something that maybe you saw in digging in a little bit deeper on him that maybe you didn't bring up on Tuesday, you know, just maybe a quick overview and again, thoughts on anything new that you may have discovered in digging deeper on him this week.
Yeah. For those who don't, 6'8", about 210, power forward post type from Montverde Academy, where Jalen Hood time. Indiana's had two commits since 2004. And, you know, they have this gives them in the Big Ten time in God knows how long. Best recruiting class for Indiana, I would say, since 2013 now. Great job by these guys getting him on campus quickly and getting him to lock in. You know, I think that, and I said this the other day, that watching some of his highlights, I think that Indiana fans are going to get a little flashback to Trace Jackson Davis. He's a lefty, played at Montverde, played a lot with his back to the basket. I don't think that's what he loves to do. I think he's more of a face-up guy, but you see a lot of his highlights from Montverde because Montverde was so talented. Everybody had very specific roles, and his was to be a back to the basket guy and use that left-handed hook to finish. Tony mentioned on our show the other day, and I think it's right after watching so much film on him, his footwork is impeccable in the post, a lot of up and under type stuff, a lot of, he faced a great competition. And so he had to sometimes face guys bigger than him at 6'8" or the same size. And he had to find ways to finish around the hoop. And he's a phenomenal finisher around the hoop, really great footwork in the post, gets himself set up well, and can really go to work down there. He also can finish with both hands, which I know will be music to Indiana fans' ears after a lot of left-handed shots from Trace Jackson Davis over the years. But he's a guy who really knows how to finish around the rim and does it from a lot of angles. And I said the other day, he doesn't need a straight line to the basket to get a bucket. He can go around guys, under guys, dip across the lane and finish, do a finger roll. Like, whatever it takes, he will find a way to put the ball in the hoop. What I like about him, and I think what expands his game above what a Trace Jackson Davis does, is his ability and I think desire to face guys up from about 10, 15 feet and drive by them. And he's a great ball handler for his size, great passer for his size. He can handle the ball in the perimeter. He's not going to, be breaking guys down off the dribble. But if you're up against another post at that spot, maybe three-point line, free throw line, he can get by you. And he's a lot quicker than he looks for his size. Very strong. He finishes through contact. He almost – and I said this about Jalen Hood-Schifino too, and I don't know if it's something that Montverde preaches or if it's just two guys who happen to be there at the same time doing the same thing, but he almost likes contact. He will finish strong through contact. He doesn't need to dunk it either. He's a good athlete with good length, but he's not, I feel like a lot of times guys are one thing or the other. They're either a super athlete who needs to find basketball IQ, or they're a good athlete with basketball IQ when they're ranked this high. He's the guy who's a good athlete, has a very high basketball IQ, reads plays very well, incredible offensive rebounder as well. Really, really great at offensive rebounding. And I think he's a willing defender and a relentless rebounder. I think that those are two things that he can bring right away. His size plays in the Big Ten. He'll probably be able to add another 15, 20 pounds. But right now he's big and he's strong. He's not a guy who's coming in. Logan Duncan, when he came out this year, was on the floor. He looked real skinny. Renaud's not going to be that. He's a load. He is strong. And I think the one drawback we see on film is his jump shot. And I think he's got decent free throw form. But you see the three-pointers he takes. It's almost like a set shot. He barely gets off the ground when he shoots. The form isn't terrible, but it just doesn't look comfortable out there. And so I'd like that. That's going to be the next step of his development, is his ability to knock down shots from 15 feet out to the 3-point line. Does he have the ability to do it? Hey, you know what? It certainly doesn't look like he's out of place out there, but he's got to be able to develop and start hitting there and get his shoulders square and follow through and all those things. Right now, he's a guy who's going to step on the floor and give you points close to the basket, give you offensive rebounds, give you a lot of energy. As I said earlier this week, I think he's a bench guy ticketed for maybe 20 minutes a game, who's going to develop and get better as time goes on. And he does a lot of little things that you want guys like that to do. He's also projects as a multi-year player. He's not a guy who's going to be a one and done. To be at his size and be a one and done, you got to be able to shoot the three and have a little more athleticism. He's missing those things. That means he's a building block, not just a guy who's going to come in and put up big numbers.
Yeah, so I think you alluded to this, but I feel like I always try to ask you these questions when we do these. So we have first one on the I'll do the positive side first. What are the things that he does that translate immediately for IU? I think you mentioned offensive rebounding and defense. Maybe it's those two, but are those the things? Are there other things that you see that earns him playing time right away and translate with what he's already doing? At least it feels like translate right away to next year.
I think early on, he's going to get a lot of points off offensive rebounds. I think that's going to be a thing where he comes off the bench and he's just going to annoy the crap out of the other team because he just works. And there are, when you watch film on him, there are times where the shot goes up and he's still moving to get position, where a lot of guys, once the shot goes up, you kind of stop, have your guy, behind you, and you're looking, for where the ball is going to be. he's digging in and pushing guys out of the way to create space so he can go get that offensive rebound. And he is a, as I said, relentless offensive rebounder. So I think that's the first thing. Second thing is, you know, he's played great competition and he's going to be able to step on the court and give you offense right away, I think. I mean, he won't, you know, he's not going to be scoring 20 points a game, but he's going to be able to get you offense in the post right away and maybe be able to step on the floor. I think he'll eventually be a pretty good pick and roll guy because he can stay out on the floor. And if he doesn't have a roll, he can, you know, a roll to the basket, he can step out, handle the ball a little bit and move it along. Just a really smart kid. He also, again, good passer for his size. And I think that his ability to just kind of control things and work within the system. And again, they have a very firm system at Montverde. It's not a run and gun, AAU style game. They really do have, you know, a pretty well-run system, and he was able to fit in perfectly. And he and Jalen Hood-Schifino worked well together. I think that will continue. Obviously they'll probably see the floor a lot together. But I think that the offense and the offensive rebounding, the first things he's going to be able to provide. And he also smart defender, you know, he'll show off a pick and roll a little to sort of slow somebody and then be able to get back. He's got some savvy and he moves well, you know, he's got good footwork and moves well. And I think all of those things combined to be like, this is a guy who can contribute early. May not start. I don't think he's a starter, but, you know, a contributor early who develops into that starter guy that you really needed before.
So on the other side of that, you know, I think the jump shot talked about and being able to step out a little bit is one thing that I think is important to his long-term future at IU, but I don't know that the lack of that is something that prevents him from contributing next year.
No.
Lord knows IU's had plenty of guys contribute who haven't been able to hit outside shots over the last few years. So we know that that's not a prerequisite for that. But what maybe is something else outside of that shooting that might be a struggle for him as you move into his first year at the college level?
Well, I think size is always an issue. I think he's strong enough to compete in the Big Ten right away. But, I mean, he's going to be facing grown men, you know, who are you know, maybe 240 and he's 210. And I'm sure he'll put on some weight as soon as he gets to campus. But I think the size is always going to be a thing, especially if he's backing up and actually playing in the post at 6'8". So I think that's a concern. And I think just getting up to speed, maybe, you know, I think he's pretty good laterally going side to side. But, you know, you can always add more of that. And I think that, you know, that's what Cliff Marshall's job is going to be, is get this guy to be a little quicker, maybe a better jump, maybe, you know, add some to his vertical, things like that. Because he's not a, you know, bouncy athlete. I think, you know, if you're looking at athleticism, I think you're looking at a Juwan Morgan type who's, you know, has athleticism, but that's not the keystone of what he does. He's more of a cerebral, smart, well-rounded player, as opposed to the guy who can jump out of the gym like a Troy Williams or someone like that.
So, Coach, you know, kind of taking into account everything that we've talked about this week with Hood-Schifino and being able to step back, listen to some different perspectives on that. I mean, what would you say are fair expectations for him for his freshman season?
Well, I agree with Ryan about the 20 minutes mark, probably somewhere, you know, 6 to 9 points a game, you know, 4 or 5 rebounds if he gets those solid minutes, you know, with the chance for that to be a little better depending on whether Trace Jackson Davis comes back and his minutes might have to increase a little bit from there. The thing that I think will play well early for Coach Woodson is that basketball IQ that Ryan's talking about, that those intangibles. He has multiple moves, angles in the post, very patient in the post. We talked about that a little bit on Monday. He,
really
he's patient and gets people to move. He can come back to his right side.
Doesn't,
you know,
force
give a little
anything.
Shimmy so. Shake. I love that Sigma face up or the quick catch, elbow catch. So there's so many things you can design with the player of that skill level. But one thing is, I think he's ready defensively, or as ready as you can be getting out of high school. Even at Mount Verde, good competition, it's a leap up to the Big Ten. But they mentioned his footwork on jumping out on ball screens, on his ability to be able to hedge ball screens and that. So if he's a quick learn for the college game, that'll get him some more minutes. But what helps him in that, what helps Hood-Schifino, is physicality. You know, it's different. You know, Tamar was highly rated. I think Tamar learned that the strength and the speed of the game. But I think he will also be able to defend the post at some point, although his size is an issue, but definitely to be able to the four And the best thing about him defensively, I believe, is his ability to switch. If they switch onto a perimeter, he will fight really hard to keep that guy in front, even though that's a small on big switch. I think he's that talented enough once he gets up to speed collegiately to be able to switch onto perimeters. And that's a key in the college game now for your fours and fives to be able to do that.
So, Ryan, let's kind of step back a little bit and look at the class overall. Phil asked a question about the roles of each guy in the class. So you've got Jalen Hutchinson, Renaud, Caleb Banks, and then CJ Gunn. Just as you look at that class overall, the first two are the headliners in terms of recruiting rankings and all those things. And I think Hutchinson is a little bit more we've talked a lot about Renaud, and I think we all have a reasonably good idea of what we at least think Hutchinson would be. But I guess kind of give some quick thoughts on him and maybe more so thoughts on Banks and Gunn as the, you know, kind of under-mentioned guys within the class and what kind of roles they may take on.
Yeah, Hutchinson's just – he's going to be a point guard, but I think that, you know, or a lead guard, I guess you would say, but he's not a high-volume scorer. I mean, he could score. He'll pop for 20 occasionally, but he's not, you know, a guy who's going to be averaging 18. You know, he's not Romeo Langford. Of that type of scoring ability. He's not a guy who, you know, he popped a few games where he had a ton of assists, but he's more of a guy who does everything to keep the offense moving, not necessarily a high volume assists guy. He has a lot of a hockey assist kind of stuff. Very solid all the way around, can kind of do everything. I mean, basically good at everything, doesn't have a specific great skill that jumps out, but he's a winning basketball player. I think that's the thing a lot of people have mentioned about Hutchinson and Renaud, and it's true, is they've won two national titles together. They're winners. They go out there and they win games, and they're players that do things that help you win games. So I love that about them. I think that's a big key, is you're bringing guys in from good programs who win. As far as Caleb Banks, he's 6'8", 215-ish, maybe 220. But he's more of a perimeter-oriented guy. He's listed as a power forward, but he's more of a guy who's going to play on the perimeter as a shooter and driver, and he's going to be a scorer. Now, I don't know what he'll be as a freshman. It'll be interesting to see, because you don't know what those guys are going to be like until you get them on campus, really. But he's not a back-to-the-basket guy the way Renaud is, despite the comparison of their size. He really stepped up as a three-point shooter this year for Fayette County. CJ Gunn, perimeter. He's a guard, 6'5", you know, under 200, I would say. And he's a pure, you know, shooting guard type guy who improved a lot this year. And I think that we can maybe do another scouting report on him. He's been committed for so long, you know, his game's changed a little bit, but he was a high volume scorer in high school this year and did a really good job at Lawrence North. And you know, really has just, I wouldn't say his game is necessarily evolved. He's just gotten better at all the things he does. And I don't know if he's going to be a guy who gets a ton of minutes early in his career, but he could be a guy who in 2 years is a big contributor to the offense. But Banks, you know, is a guy who really took a jump this year, I thought, you know, went from a lot of potential to actually fulfilling it. So you're getting guys who do a lot of different things. But one thing you're getting with Banks and Gunn is shooters. Hutchinson's a guy who needs to work on his jumper. He's a guy whose feet will often be facing that way when he's shooting this way, you know, straight ahead, and his feet are off to the left. So he's got to work that out. He'll be able to hit some, but he's not a knockdown jump shooter. And Renaud is a right now a back to the basket post guy who likes to maybe step out and drive you from about 10, 15 feet. So they all kind of do different things. And it is really a complete class, I think, a very good class. And one thing about getting Renaud that was great is there was a big hole in the front court moving forward, especially if Trace Jackson Davis left. But I'm talking about after next season. And that was what made Xavier Booker like a must get for this program. And getting Renaud really softens that to a point where you want to get Xavier Booker, but it's not as big an emergency as you thought it was.
Yeah, Coach, as you look at the class as a whole, you know, what are your thoughts? I think Ryan made a good point there toward the end. You've got a lot of different skill sets. You really don't have any duplication from a positional standpoint. You really have four different guys who, in theory, would play four different positions, four different roles on the team out there, which I think makes some sense just to get some, you know, kind of cover a broad range of things. But what's your overall thoughts on the class and high level expectations for the other three?
Yeah, the top five, you know, recruiting class speaks for you're getting athletes. They're all athletes in their specific role. You know, Malik is going to be a below the rim kind of athlete, not a high flyer, but he's going to be able to do a lot of things. And then you have Banks, who can move, shoot some. It'll be interesting to see at 6'7", is it that a four spot that he plays and then he's behind a couple guys this year, or can he back up a cop or play the three, or a Geronimo at the three? If Geronimo moves to the three, it's going to be interesting to see where he's at. Really interested in seeing his ability to contribute and how much his freshman year. I think there might be difficulty finding him some minutes based on who's there and who might come back, and they're recruiting the Dennis guy. Gunn is probably going to be someone who's learning his freshman year, but he's a shooter and a scorer. And then Hood Schifino is going to be the Rob Finnessy of next year. Rob played 18 minutes, scored 4.5 points. I think Jalen Hood Schifino will have different types of production. He'll miss the experience that Rob had, but his ability those hockey assists, those ability to come off ball screens and snake back in and have guys on your back and then find the next open guy, I think he is there already. I think he has the confidence as a freshman, you know, that is going to be built up to be the next Xavier Johnson, at least as coming off ball screens and doing those things. So I think two guys will have major roles probably off the bench. Jalen Hood Schifino, if he doesn't start, will be off the bench. Malik off the bench. Both of them should get 20 minutes. I hope they get 20 minutes so they can develop forward. I think the other two guys will be hit or miss game situations to play, but all four have distinctly different skill sets, and I'm sure Woodson will find a way to build that and utilize it.
Absolutely. And yeah, I agree, Ryan. That's probably something as we're sometimes looking for topics on some of these offseason shows, probably a revisiting of CJ Gunn after his last season would probably be a worthwhile endeavor. So we'll put that on the list. All right. Well, coming up on the assembly call, we will answer some of the best questions that were submitted by our community members this week. That's next. Stick with us here on the assembly call.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
All right. I'm just going to roll right into this next one. We'll try to at least hit a few of these before we got to shut it down here. So we'll just we will dive right in.
This is Nick Zeisloft. I never miss an open three, and I never miss an episode of The Assembly Call.
And welcome back to the Assembly Call. I'm Andy Bottoms here with the coach, Brian Tonsoni, and Ryan Phillips. And now it is time for our mailbag. All questions were submitted via our private IU basketball discussion community, which you can learn more about and join at assemblycall.com/community. All right, to start things off.
It's not that not that bad. It's Jay's Mediocre Question.
All right, this week's Mediocre Question. Let's assume the big three are back in TJD, Xavier Johnson, and Race Thompson. In your opinion, who will be the next most important player in determining whether IU basketball takes a big step forward next season? And by big step forward, he's alluding to competing at the top of the Big Ten and for the second weekend of the tournament. So next most important behind those guys, not necessarily just next most important to return, but next most important to contribute. So Ryan, I'll throw this one to you first.
Tamar Bates. I think he's got to take that next step as a scorer. They need perimeter scoring. They need a shooter, a guy who can shoot out there. And I think Tamar has shown the ability to do that, but he needs to get better. And they need a guy who can score off the bounce and maybe hit that. You know, if he doesn't get to the rim, he's shown a pull-up game. He's, you know, shown that he can do it. He just needs to take that next step and become sort of an alpha scorer and maybe even a closer, because they need some help with a closer from the perimeter. Johnson did it some this year. TJD was a closer this year, but Tamar Bates is the guy who needs to take the leap forward for Indiana to be. And I think a lot of people are assuming that he will because of just how talented he is. But, you know, top 30 recruit, got to start showing like it.
Bad shot maker to Tamar Bates, easily. He has ability to be a bad shot or a late shot clock maker. You know, when you're down to 3 or 4 seconds and make a move and score at the elbow or pull up at three and hit in someone's face. Indiana hasn't had that for a while, and I think Tamar has the potential to do that. I'm not saying he's going to be able to do that, but if he does that and all three of those guys are back doing what they did last year and we add quality freshmen to the bench, that's again, you know, Ryan said it earlier, the outside shooting, the scoring, the scorer's mentality, the alpha, all of that stuff is true. I think Tamar has the best chance to get there with his skill set.
Yeah, for me, I think if you make the assumption that both Race and Trace are back, I think it probably isn't a front court guy that is then the answer to this question. So it really leaves you to perimeter guys, and Tamar Bates is one. And that's probably who I would go with as well. I think the other two that came to mind for me to think about, you know, one Coach Marlowe mentions here in the chat is Trey Galloway. I think that's very contingent upon him really, really improving his shooting in the offseason. Which is a big question mark, obviously, based on what we've seen, and I don't think something that we would bet a whole lot of money on. But I think he'll put in the work to try to do it. I think it's just a question of whether you see those results. And the other guy along those lines would be Hutch Yuffino. I think being able to have a secondary ball handler out there, another guy, another playmaker in there would be important. And I think his size, both from a defensive standpoint and I think allow some versatility there. So I would go with Tamar, but I think those other two guys would be in the mix as well, simply because I feel like it has to be somebody on the perimeter, because those are really where the most uncertainty, I guess, would be from a, you know, starting lineup and that kind of standpoint. All right, next from Greg. Does a transfer portal need reformed? I'm thinking free transfers when head or associate head coaches leave. Otherwise, one free transfer for juniors, seniors, but some restrictions on freshmen and sophomores. Maybe it doesn't need changes at all, or maybe we need a few more years to see how things shake out. Coach, I'll throw this to you first. I know you've talked a lot in answering some of these questions about how you've maybe changed your opinions on some of these things over the course of time. But, you know, what are your thoughts on whether it's okay like it is, it should change, or we just don't know enough yet to figure out what the real impact of it is on college basketball?
I think the answer is we really don't know enough yet on a 4-year, 5-year impact or a rotation of transfers multiple years. That's probably the real answer. Traditionally, from an old man standpoint, it's hard to see 1,400 players in the transfer portal. I think 1,200 were scholarship, 200 were walk-ons. You know, the idea, the old values of commitment, you make a commitment, your word is good, you go there, you develop, win your weight, all those things I believe in still hold true and value. But also, if you go to a school as a student and it's not right for you and you want to transfer someone else, you're allowed to do that. And technically, these kids are students at universities. So just because they play a sport doesn't mean they have to be locked into 3 years, 4 years. I have come around to that. I don't know if that is correct for everyone. It wasn't for me 2 or 3 years ago when this thing was starting. I didn't like it because of the commitment and wanting to like players to stay for 2 or 3 years to get to know them. But I think everything might need adjusted at some point, the NIL, the transfer portal, because we just haven't seen a full cycle of the impact of it. But I think it's headed in the right direction, because there's a lot of money in college sports on the backs of these young men and women now that I think some of this is good for them to be able to do stuff that they choose to do. And ultimately comes down to a person thing for me, not a basketball thing for me. So I'm okay with it. Always open for some changes.
Ryan, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's going to be things will evolve over time as they see what works. I do think that, you know, you're getting into a situation where guys are transferring and then there's just too many transfers in too few spots. And so I think that is something they need to protect against. But I'm not sure, you know, what to do. I don't have any solutions right now. I do think that guys should be able to transfer once. I do think that you get a lot of these kids have been taken advantage of over the years. We're sold a bill of goods about playing time and all that, and then coaches just mean to have them as reserves, and it's not fair to the players where they could go somewhere else where there's playing time. And also, these are kids making life-changing decisions at 17. Sometimes they make the wrong decision, and they should have the ability to get out of that decision and maybe go somewhere that's right for them. So I like the rule when it was implemented, but I think that the one-time transfer, I liked that when it was implemented. We'll see how it shakes out. I'm always willing to have these things evolve and change. But I'm also a lot for player empowerment, because I think college basketball players have been taken advantage of, for college athletes in general, have been taken advantage of for far too long. And it's nice to see them being able to make some money off their name and be able to control their own destiny and things like that. And, you know, if it adds a little more stress to the guys making millions and millions of dollars off their backs, well, I'm sorry, fellas, you're going to have to get used to it.
Yeah, I think it's – I don't know what the best answer to it is. You know, some of these guys that I see that are on school number four over a – you know, like Josh LeBlanc is a guy that I was thinking of. You know, started at Georgetown, then went to LSU – then went to UAB, and now I think transferred to Nicholls State or something like that. I mean, I think at some point there's probably a limit that needs to be hit, unless there's some extenuating circumstances there. So maybe you can do that if
family member,
if
health,
you just so happen to be, if you just so happen to be at a place with a coach left every year or whatever, and there's some of that. I think the family health stuff is one that was used, but then I think it was abused at other times as well. And I think if you're the NCAA and some, you're kind of putting yourself in the position to be the villain, because the ability to really apply these rules and whatever waivers you give, everybody's always going to scrutinize, well, why did you approve this one but not this one and whatever else? So it's almost like you throw your hands up and just say, do whatever you want. And maybe that's what the answer is with that eventually. But I think we're probably too soon to tell in some of this. I think it's also too soon to tell for some of the players to be able to understand, you know, what are the track records of guys who have done some of these things, and to say, hey, is this really the right move? More often than not, does this work out for somebody or not? And I, you know, you would hope that players are taking that into account as they see different things and saying, hey, I'm, you know, typically guys transferring from high major school to a mid-major school, here's what typically happens in some of that. But we'll see. I don't have a huge issue with it. I just I think it's probably a little bit too early to tell. All right. So I'll throw this one out. This is from JD. There's also kind of a question from Robin here to hit, and then we'll wrap up after this. Perhaps you all know more than I do, but why is the fan base getting upset or totally supporting the coaching staff potentially running off players when that hasn't actually happened yet? Also, isn't it possible that any of the four guys who already decided to transfer – we're also essentially told not to come back? I guess I don't get this much focus on the issue. And then, you know, Rob's question was along the same lines and basically saying, am I wrong to hope that neither of these portal transfers commit? I don't really like the idea of a potential situation where someone could get run off, for lack of a better phrase. To me, the downsides of that are heavier than the potential improvements that either of these guys provide. Ryan, I'll throw that one to you first. I mean, I guess it's generally thoughts on kind of do's and don'ts of roster management in some ways, and kind of your view on that aspect of things.
Running players off is is never great business because word gets around and coaches won't send their kids to play for guys that consistently run people off. That said, some of the players on the team were not recruited by Mike Woodson. And if they don't fit his system, I'm not saying he's going to force them out, but I think it becomes very obvious that they do not fit what he's trying to do. And in a lot of cases, it's not a spoken thing. It's not walking, you know, calling the kid in the office being like, you need to transfer. It's a lot of the kids just like, I don't really fit here anymore. I understand I'm not going to get playing time. I'm going to go somewhere where I can get playing time. Rob Phinisee started for 3 years and was not a starter this year because Xavier Johnson was better than him. And so he went somewhere where he's going to have an opportunity to start. I don't think that's running anybody off. Parker Stewart clashed with Mike Woodson a few times this year. We know that from reports. And I don't think it was anything bad. I just think it was the kind of thing where maybe he's going to go somewhere where he can, you know, maybe have the ball in his hands a little more, try and score a little more. And he's not just a standing shooter. So I think that a lot of it is just, you know, Christian Lander just never got it together at Indiana. And Mike Woodson clearly, by recruiting Jalen Huchefino and getting him, the writing was on the wall that Jalen Huchefino is the next long-term point guard at Indiana, not Christian Lander. And so I think that he just moved on and went somewhere, and he didn't play much this year because he didn't play defense and all that. So I just think that sometimes it's not an explicit message. It's just, these are the guys we're bringing in. You, I didn't recruit. Are you going to stay knowing that the guys I recruited are probably fit my system better? And so it's, a lot of these guys leave in search of playing time. And I'm not a fan of running people off. If they have a scholarship in Indiana, they should continue to have a scholarship in Indiana. But I think a lot of these guys read the writing on the wall and decide to move on because of that.
I think we call it running off too, but there's honest conversations. If you're a good coach, you're having conversations about playing time throughout the whole year and development throughout the whole year. And you can have an honest conversation and say, player A, you know what? I don't see a place where you're going to get a lot of minutes next year. I'm just telling you that. So you have some decisions to make. If you're here, we're going to, you know, love to have you. If not, you know, we're going to find someone to take your place. But it's going to be very difficult for you to have minutes. And sometimes it's unless you develop A, B, and C in your game in a year, and that's likely not to happen. But I think there's an honest way to be honest about the future for some people so they can make the best decision for them. That I'm for. I'm not a for just saying all of a sudden you got a guy you think's better. Now you're going to go, hey, and just flat out cut a kid in a college situation. It's got to be done correctly. And overall, I think coaches need to plan out their roster too. But with this roster portal, the portal stuff, roster construction is more fluid now. And I think you just got to be honest with the athletes. We're going to play the best 8 or 9. And if you're not one of the best 8 or 9, we're going to bring people in. And then you might need to move elsewhere. I know that sounds harsh. And for me, I don't like it. But it's all part of this new NCAA basketball. I'm trying to enjoy the sport, even though some of the things and not worry about things that I can't change because it's not going to go backwards and embrace it and hope Coach Woodson has success. But I don't like it either. But the question, original question, JD, we as Indiana fans fall in love with players because they come to Indiana. We love Indiana. And then we like to get to know them. And we like to follow them from freshman to senior year or till they declare, you know, 2 years, 3 years. We enjoy that. And we see it as more of a fandom situation than a roster construction. The coach is paid to construct the roster. We grow attached to players through social media and other things, and that makes it a little bit harder and why people get a little more upset with the running off, in my opinion, and it becomes a topic. But there are right now 15 possible players for 13 spots, either having visits or having NBA decisions. And what that means is someone's got to go or someone's not going to be asked to come if it's those transfer portal guys. So that's another reason why it's in the news and people are talking about it.
Yeah, I think a couple things that you said really resonated with me, Coach. The first was just about the honest conversation. To me, it's maybe this is because I'm in the performance review cycle at work right now and have been doing that a lot this week. But, you know, being able to have those frank conversations that say, hey, look, this is the current situation. Here's what you're doing well. Here's where you need to get better. Here's what I see the future of you in this particular role, this program, this whatever else the case may be, and being able to have some of that. And I think also, and we alluded to this in the when we were talking about the McNeil and Dexter Dennis visiting, I mean, those guys, even as potential people coming in, no different than guys in the program, are having to take a look at where do the minutes come from me, and am I going to be comfortable with the role that I think that I'm going to start out with? Doesn't mean that I'm not willing to work hard to try to expand that role or whatever else, but what does that look like? And then, you know, trying to figure out where, you know, where they are and go from there. So it's, you know, there's no perfect answer to the situation there. I think in some cases it may be a result that is best for everybody, but I do think it's a difficult position that you're putting everybody in. And I think some of the stuff with the COVID years and things like that have made a complex situation even more complex, because not only am I trying to plan for who I knew was going to leave, I now have guys that kind of have this year in limbo, and that's obviously a temporary thing at this point and eventually will not be a factor. But I do think that's an added wrinkle that's made it a little bit more difficult where you've got guys that can do some of this. So at any rate, we'll kind of see how it plays out. I think a lot of times everybody says these things have a way of working themselves out, and we'll see what happens in the coming weeks for IU and how that all shakes out. All right, well, that will do it for this week's episode of the Assembly Call. If you want to see us do the show live, you can join us at assemblycall.com on Thursday nights for the live broadcast of our Assembly Call radio recording. Thanks to Bob Thompson for producing our music, and thanks to John Ringer of rigsdesign.com for designing our logos. And thank you for listening. We'll talk to you again next Thursday night, unless other breaking news comes about. Until then,
take it from me, Christian Wofford. Keep your elbows in and your eyes on the rim. Go Hoosiers.
Thank you. Thanks for coming out.
I like everything about that.
All right, fellas. We're 10 minutes over. We were close to what we were trying to do. We'll get there.
Hey, you're the one who needed to get out. So
someday.
All on you.
So, all right.
Good show, fellas.
We're good.
Have a good week.
Appreciate it, guys. And, yeah, everybody, we'll be back if any other breaking news hits like it did this week. And otherwise, we will talk to everybody again on Thursday. So, thanks, everybody. Have a good night, guys.